All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman. Today, we are talking about what happened in the first 3 days of Falcons training camp, as well as talking about the extensions signed by head coach Dan Quinn, GM Thomas Dimitroff, and of course, left tackle Jake Matthews.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FileFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the internet, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. You can find me on Twitter, at FileFans. And today we're talking about the first couple of days of free agency, of training camp, and just some notes I've taken based off of what I've been hearing, what I've been seeing as, you know, not necessarily being at camp all these days, but some topics that I think are sort of interesting and worth a little bit of deeper discussion. And we'll also talk about the news of Jake Matthews' contract extension and also talk about Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff's contract extensions, which we did not talk about last week when they signed those, you know, a couple of days before training camp started. But let's jump right into what's been going on at training camp. Just going through my notes, not a whole lot that is overly compelling. I think it's interesting that you see the Falcons are taking the tack when it comes to the return specialist job, as well as fullback to a certain extent, where it looks like the Falcons are going to have a rotating group of guys at those positions over the next several days. And we'll see how long that goes into training camp. With the return specialist, Dan Quinn indicated on Friday that they would have two new guys every day, sort of competing for that those duties, particularly at the punt return job. And we'll see. And he also indicated that that was something that might last until the very end of the preseason. So it could be a situation where we're going into that fourth preseason game where whoever outperforms, you know, the other guy, player A versus player B, in that game, will be the guy that opens the season as the team's, you know, main punt returner and whatnot. And the fullback position seems to be following along similar lines. Saturday's practice opened, the 11-on-11 practices opened with Luke McNitt at the starter. Sunday's was Daniel Marks, so presumably Ricky Ortiz was on Friday or will be on Monday or something like that. And it seems like the Falcons are sort of alternating that guy. And again, that's another position that sort of the expectation is we'll go fairly deep into the summer, into the month of August, and maybe into September without any true clarity at that fullback position. And we'll see how it plays out. But that's something that we touched upon a month ago when we were talking about the camp battles at that position. Was one of the concerns I had was because three guys are sort of, it's an open gig where you have three guys competing for that spot. If one of those guys doesn't quickly emerge as a clear-cut front runner, you do run into the problem of if it's still a three-man race, you know, going well into the preseason, into game two, game three, whatnot, and especially game four, then you're maybe potentially doing whoever does win that job a disservice because that guy is not getting as many reps as he should that are going to prepare him to be able to perform week one. So that is going to be something to monitor as the summer goes on. But at this point in time, we'll have to see how it plays out. As far as other things that happened at practice, not a whole lot stood out to me. I mean, there were some minor injuries here or there, but not anything that's to me worthy of sort of spending too much time worrying about. You know, Tack McKinley's day-to-day with a shoulder issue. Sounds like Ito Smith and Ty Sambrello are also day-to-day with foot and hand injuries, respectively. Calvin Ridley did not finish practice on Saturday due to a hamstring that was somewhat related to dehydration due to the heat or whatever, and was fine on Sunday for the team's live padded practice in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. I still have this inkling to want to call it the Georgia Dome. It's still going to take me a while for me, you know, that's going to slip through on this podcast. So don't immediately be like, you know, I still want to call the LA Chargers San Diego. We're now like, what, 2 years removed from that. So just take that in stride. But you know, I think injuries are definitely a thing that you want to avoid. And I certainly think for particularly in among that four-man group that I just mentioned, a guy like Sam Brailo, I think it's a little bit more problematic if he is day-to-day, which, you know, could mean that he misses 2 days or it could mean that he misses a week or more. Day-to-day is very vague. It's just like, you know, we figure it out day-to-day in terms of how long a guy is going to miss. But it usually means that he's not necessarily going to be out for like 2 weeks where they can automatically say that. So for guys that aren't locks to make the team, the point I'm trying to make is injuries can be a lot more problematic for those guys simply because all the reps that they miss gives an opportunity for somebody else to wind up taking that job. I think for guys like Tack and Ridley and Ito Smith, who are pretty safe locks to make the team, it's not as big a deal as long as those injuries are sort of short-term injuries like these are. And I think the main injuries that I'm mostly concerned with are the ones that do last 2 weeks, the ones that do last 4 weeks or 6 weeks or potentially months or season-ending injuries. And you've seen elsewhere around the league where several prominent players have had, you know, potential season-ending injuries already this summer. And so you're just sort of hoping that you don't run into that this summer. But, you know, for the most part, those injuries don't necessarily concern me too much. Not a whole lot else to me that necessary to glean from training camp practices. You hear some certain things about the depth chart. You hear some players get talked up, some players whatnot. But I think, you know, my strategy and part of this is because I have not been privy to going to training camp practices every day or every year over the passes, you find out the truth of the thing when you get to the first preseason game and how the team structures their depth chart does tell you a lot more than, you know, this soundbite here, or this soundbite here, or this tweet here, or that tweet here, there. So that's sort of where, when we get to August 10th and we play that Jets team, that's going to be, I think, where some of these, you know, some of the hype on some of these young players or newcomers or whoever it is, we'll sort of see that potentially bear out when those guys get on the field and actually start hitting, you know, players that aren't playing for their same team. And so they can actually, you know, lay out a guy. If they want to. So that's basically all I have to say about training camp, and we'll be back, you know, in the coming days to talk about other interesting topics, but so far, not a whole lot that I think is worthy of sort of spending too much time trying to parse through, like, what does this mean? It's the first couple of days of training camp. We still have plenty of time for things to develop and whatnot. Now, that being said, let's talk about the extensions that the Falcons have given out over the last couple of days. But before we do, I do want to plug LockedOnSports.com, your one-stop hub for the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find Major League Baseball, NBA, and NFL content. Again, LockedOnSports.com, your team every day. So let's talk about the Dan Quinn and Dimitroff extensions first, because that happened first, and we skipped over that on this here podcast. It wasn't that big a deal. It's like, okay, yeah, Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff got extensions. Of course they did. Like, look, Thomas Dimitroff, Rich McKay has never met a GM that he has wanted to fire. So Thomas Dimitroff is going to be here for a long time. You know, you can feel a certain way about that if you choose to. If I'm being completely honest, I expect Thomas Dimitroff to outlast Matt Ryan in Atlanta. And I expect Matt Ryan to play at least another 5, if not 7 more years, if not more, in Atlanta. So, you know, the fact that Dimitroff, I think they got extended through 2022 or something like that. So yeah, this is only the tip of the iceberg. He's probably got like 2 more extensions in him. Rich McKay is like still in Atlanta, and this is like what years he'll be coming up on year 15 in this December, in terms of his stint in Atlanta. So yeah, there's zero chance that, you know, Thomas Dimitroff is not going to get at least 1 or 2 more extensions after this point. So I think both of those extensions make a lot of sense. I'm messing around here, but I do think they make a lot of sense. You know, obviously Dan Quinn has done a wonderful job over these last couple of years. I still like to throw shade at him from time to time and nitpick some of these things that he does. You know, Patrick DeMarco, why? But, you know, for the most part, he's done an outstanding job. I think he's, you know, been sort of the guy that has really steered the ship, so to speak. these last couple of years to the team's success with his sort of infusion of energy and his philosophies and sort of the things and sort of taking control of the roster from Thomas Dimitroff, I think has really helped this team out in a lot of ways these last couple of years, because you have a guy that clearly has a vision in the Falcons. You know, over those last couple of years under Mike Smith, we're sort of twisting in the wind, trying to figure out how do we become a Super Bowl team, and they didn't realize that the foundation had crumbled of that team, and they're still trying to figure out, you know, what type of marble to put on the second floor bathroom to make it a really spectacular bathroom. Meanwhile, you know, there's termites and the foundation is sinking into the hole, to continue the analogy. Dimitroff is a guy that I've had a love-hate relationship with, you, if you could say, in terms of my, tweeting and podcasting about him. I think certainly he deserves an extension, you know. I guess for me, I feel like the first, you can separate his career in three phases. I think the first 3 years from 2008 to 2010 here in Atlanta, he did an outstanding job. I think things fell on hard times starting in 2011. And continued until 2014. And I think Dan Quinn came in here in 2015, and then you can sort of see the needle once again start to point up. I guess where I can forgive Dimitroff for some of those years and some of those mistakes. I don't necessarily know if I will ever forget some of those mistakes in some of those years. And I think that's part of my sort of relationship with this whole situation. Again, not suggesting that he didn't deserve his extension, again, because he's done a very good job over these last couple of years. I think, you know, you saw a lot of people since he got that extension talk about how great he's done managing the cap, and I think that's true. These last couple of years, I think he really has done an outstanding job, and I expect he will continue to do so over these next couple of years now that the Falcons have a cap that really requires management. I think part of that is, I remember people were saying that in 2015 when it was much more a topic of discussion whether or not he would stick around much further. And I think if you're praising him for his cap management in 2018, makes a lot of sense. But the people that were doing so in 2015, to me, didn't make a lot of sense. I mean, we were just, 2 years removed from the Sam Baker contract. We were a year removed from the Solei contract and the Tyson Jackson contract. Like, he hadn't really done a great job managing the cap, because a lot of those years, the Falcons really didn't have players that required lucrative contracts. Like, you know, outside of the obvious people like Roddy White and Matt Ryan and Julio Jones from, 2013 to 2015, like, the biggest extensions he gave out to anybody were Matt Bosher and Josh Harris. Like, and that, to me, was reflective of the deteriorating talent that the team had started to acquire at a certain point, and getting very few players beyond, that 2009 and 2010 draft. And really, if we're being honest, who was the number one pick in 2010? Was that Sean Witherspoon? Yeah. Basically, Willie Moe was the last player, prominent player that they had drafted that really merited a significant second contract, because we saw with Witherspoon his injury history, with Corey Peters being injured in his contract year. Those guys didn't necessarily merit, you know, getting these monster deals that maybe their market would have dictated had they been able to stay healthy. And so that was part of my whole thing, was people were saying oh, he's great at managing the cap. It's like, what does he have to manage? Like, he's just giving out a bunch of bad contracts to these free agents, and he doesn't have any homegrown talent that he has to really spend a lot of money and fit under this cap. And so the Falcons have all this, just because they have all this cap flexibility, you're saying he's done a great job managing the cap. You have to look behind the reasons why the Falcons have all this cap space that they can sort of utilize and whatnot, or choose not to utilize, in the cases of Patrick DeMarco. I'm sorry. I'm gonna let it go. No, I'm not. I'm not going to let it go.
I think looking today, I think now that you had more contracts and you have Trufant, you have Alford, you have Schrader, now you have Jake Matthews, you have Julio getting his money, you got a second, even more lucrative contract for Matt Ryan now, and you have upcoming deals for Grady Jarrett, Ricardo Allen, presumably Keanu Neal, Deion Jones as well, and then you have to figure out, okay, where does Tevin Coleman fit in this? Where does Devondre Campbell fit in this? You know, all these sorts of things that do really require a lot of effort, a lot of energy, and a lot of sort of creativity when it comes to managing the cap. I do think Thomas Dimitroff and his staff in the front office certainly are much more deserving of being, you know, quote unquote, cap geniuses in terms of what they're doing right now and presuming that that projects into the future. So certainly don't want to sound like it isn't a well-deserved extension. I just, you know, again, I can forgive. I just can't necessarily forget about some of the past mistakes. Both those guys hopefully will continue to do what they've done the last couple of years in the foreseeable future. And I look forward to, you know, future episodes where I can either critique or not critique their decisions. Hopefully not critique. And 3 years, like, you hope that I'm still 3 years from now, I'm still talking about Patrick DeMarco. Because you know what that means? That means there hasn't been any other mistakes that the team has made in the last 3 years to sort of overshadow that. So, you know, part of you should actually hope that I don't let it go. But let's talk a little bit about the Jake Matthews extension in a bit. All right, so let's talk about Jake Matthews and his extension. And I don't know how often we've talked about this on this podcast. I feel like we talked about it at the end of the season and maybe at one point during March or April or something like that. I know we talked about it like a timetable of when it would happen, not necessarily if or it should happen. I know there are a lot of people that are sort of vocally, I wouldn't say anti-Jake Matthews, but very skeptical of Jake Matthews, let's say that. There are some people that are probably anti-Jake Matthews. I personally, yeah, I don't think Jake is an amazing offensive tackle. I think he's a solid to good one. I think given the circumstances of the Falcons' offensive line, we talked, and this is something we have talked about on this podcast, in terms of how old they are, where you have four of your starters are over the age of 30, and Jake Matthews is the only one, and maybe Wes Schweitzer, and maybe Sean Harlow, that you would look at, you know, and those are very big maybes at this point that are on the other side of 30 and presumably will be still starting for this team in 3 years. I think it's sort of, even if you weren't as high on Jake Matthews as other people are, I think it kind of forces the Falcons' hand in that regard. You know, this is, to me, I've made comparisons in the past to sort of Sam Baker. I think Jake, the main issue with Jake is durability, similar to what it was with Sam Baker, but I don't think his durability issues are as dire as they were with Sam Baker, where he's consistently missing games. There have been a number of times where he's played hurt over the last couple of years, but that's probably only been about, you know, the stretch run in 2016 and for probably at least two-thirds of 20, at least a third, if not two-thirds of his rookie year in 2014. But 2015 and 2017, he was pretty healthy. So it's not as sort of dire. It's not like Julio Jones, what we talked about in a recent episode, where it's like every year there's like three or four games at the least where Julio is playing hurt. But I think with Jake's contract, trying to get back to the point I was trying to make with Jake, I think it's fair to criticize Jake. I think it's fair to be critical of him. I don't think it's quite as fair to be like, this is a bad contract. I think it's a good contract. I think ultimately it'll boil down to whether or not Jake continues to improve. He has over the last 4 years. I don't necessarily know if there's, you know, a whole lot of untapped potential that he's going to be significantly better over the next 4 years than he has been over the last couple. But I think he's not gotten a lot of credit for being pretty consistent. I know people still hold it against him. The multiple holding calls in the Super Bowl, I saw people tweeting like, oh, Jake Matthews holds all the time. And it's like, well, you're judging, you know, you're once again making the thing that I constantly complain about, where you're taking one game and applying it to the whole as opposed to just isolating it as one game. And, you know, I think he had three holding calls last year, and you look at it on a snap-to-snap basis, he was about league average in terms of left tackles, in terms of his holding, the number of times he was called for holding last year, which is an improvement over what he was the previous 2 years. So, that's not really a thing anymore, if you ask me. But again, he's one of those players that I think is very polarizing, because I think based off of where the Falcons drafted him and probably due to his name being Matthews, I think there was this expectation that he would be this sort of Joe Thomas, Bruce Matthews type of Hall of Fame type caliber of player. And the fact that he hasn't lived up to that, I think, has caused people to be like, he's not that good. And it's the whole notion of, you know, like, to me, Jake is, on a bad day, he's probably like a 5 out of 10. But those happen maybe like 3 or 4 times a year against like the Everson Griffin types of players. Most days, he's like a 7 out of 10. And on the rare occasions, he's probably like an 8 out of 10, which is probably as many of those games as he does the 5 games that he has. So I think it balances out that, you know, he's a 6.5, 7 plus type of player for the most part. And like, I don't see why that's a problem. Like, you know, maybe that's not what you envisioned when you saw him being a top 10 pick, but I think that's fine. You know, maybe that in your eyes isn't worth $80 million or I'm sorry, $75 million that he got. I'm thinking Taylor Lewan of that 80. But like, it is kind of what it is. And that's the market. Just like, you know, is a 7 out of 10 quarterback worth $100 million? Probably not, but that's kind of what the market dictates. So it's one of those things where I feel like Jake gets probably a little too much flack from a significant portion of the fan base than he necessarily deserves. And going back to what I originally started this conversation as, part of the reason why we don't talk about him, because I just feel like at this point, if you're not, you know, on the Jake Matthews bandwagon, or you're not content with Jake Matthews, he's another example of a player that, like, there's really nothing I can say to you at this point that's going to convince you otherwise. So from my perspective, it's just kind of just a waste of an argument. I don't feel like I need to, you know, I don't feel like I need to spend time on Twitter arguing with people about, you know, who's better, Taylor Lewan or Jake Matthews. You know, for the record, I think Taylor Lewan's better. I didn't think that when we drafted him, but I think he's outplayed Jake Matthews. But, you know, part of the downside with Taylor Lewan is, even though he doesn't get a lot of holding calls, he gets a ton of personal foul calls. Now, some people would say that's a good thing. I'd rather take those, you know, 5 personal foul calls for 15 yards than a holding call. You know, again, I don't get that, but, you know, maybe it's the lesser of two evils in some people's eyes. You know, you'd rather have an over-aggressive offensive tackle than an under-aggressive offensive tackle, I guess. But, you know, to me, it's one of those things where it's like, it doesn't matter how good you think Jake Matthews is, whether you think he's the 7th best left tackle in the league or you think he's the 15th best left tackle in the league. You know, it is what it is. And I'm glad that the Falcons can lock him up. And I hope he, you know, when we drafted him, I envisioned him being, you know, a bookend offensive tackle for this team for a very long time. And he would be one of those players, much like a Tony Gonzalez type of player, not necessarily as being, you know, a Hall of Famer, but a guy that, you know, when we get, you know, 8, 9, 10 years into his career, he could be one of those elder statesman type of players. I could picture him, you know, when we go to training camp in, say, like 2023 or whatever, and Jake Matthews is still there, and there's, you know, people are putting microphones in his face and like, what do you think about the team this year, Jake? You've been around the block so many times and blah, blah, blah. And like, I could picture him, you know, sitting there and holding court with the media about like why he likes this year's team versus last year's team and why he thinks this team, you know, that type of player. Like, he's going to be that type of player, even if you don't necessarily think that as a blocker, he's this amazing world-class talent, but I think he's going to be a solid player. And so I think, you know, as far as the contract extension, we don't have a lot of details about it. My assumption is that the Falcons, by giving him that extension, and the hope was, and this is something we did talk about in the spring and winter, was that they would be able to lower his cap hit from roughly 12.5 million in 2018 to something, you know, in single digits. I mean, or not single digits, when you talk about millions of dollars, in 7 digits as opposed to 8 digits. But like in terms of under $10 million. So that's the hope. So hopefully the Falcons saved at least like $3 million against their cap this year. And that's money that can now be utilized to pay guys like Ricardo Allen and Grady Jarrett, particularly Jarrett, where when you look at sort of what his base level contract is likely going to be, the expectation is that his cap hit will go up from, I think it was like 1.8 or 1.9 million this year. So it's probably going to be on somewhere north of 3 million, somewhere between 3 to 5 million. And so basically the hope is that whatever money you saved with Jake will be the money that you then now add to your cap by signing Grady Jarrett between now and the end of the season. And the same sort of applies for Ricardo Alonso. Again, this goes back to Dimitroff and his creativity. This is more a testament of being creative with the cap and being one of those quote-unquote geniuses when it comes to manipulating the cap, because how much they save with Jake Mathews could have a direct impact on whether or not, you know, the negotiations with Jarrett and Allen, because they could be a little bit more flexible if they, like, if they save $6 million by signing Jake Mathews to this extension, you know, and then all of a sudden that means they can up their offer to Grady Jarrett or Ricardo Allen a little bit more, at least in terms of upfront money, then that means those guys can sign sooner, and so they can take care of that. And so that goes in more into that being creative with the cap, as opposed to they didn't overpay for John Osamoah. Isn't that make Dimitroff a great cap guru? Like, okay, I guess. Sure, guy. So, I mean, that's like, I don't really have a whole lot else to add to Jake Mathews. I'm looking forward to him continue to improve. It's one of those things where, just going back to what I was saying, like, I don't, you know, arguing with people about whether a player is good or not, it's one of those things I grow tedious with. It's like, I'll get into a fight with people about Austin Hooper because I feel like people haven't given him a fair shake, but I'm not going to necessarily get into a fight with people about what do you think about Jake Mathews or whatever. Like, you've had 4 years to give him a fair shake. If you continue to not give him a fair shake, there ain't nothing I'm going to say to you that's going to change, you know, that pace. Is the same similar situation with Matt Ryan. Like, the last thing I want to do is get into debates about how good Matt Ryan is. So anytime someone does that in my mentions, I'm like, ugh, here we go. Leave me out of this. Jeez. Trying to think, is there anything else I want to add about Jake Mathews that doesn't involve me complaining about other people's opinions of him? No, I mean, I think the one thing I will say with Jake Mathews, I think he has definitely benefited from the fact that the team made the switch to the outside zone scheme with Kyle Shanahan. That was something, and that was kind of one of the issues I had with the Mike Smith regime, and to a lesser extent, Dimitroff, is that the team just never really had they were sort of just like throwing darts at the board when it came to their offensive linemen. Like, one year they would take these big burly guys that are power blockers, and the next year they would take these zone blocking guys. And it was like, do you have a blocking scheme that you like? Because it just seems like you're just making it up as you go. And that was one of the frustrating things. And I think, you know, one of the things that Jake Mathews, you know, should continue to get credit for is he's a very good fit in this outside zone scheme. He has been hit and miss at times as a run blocker, but I think that's been something that has steadily developed and improved over these last couple of years. He's never going to be one of these road graders that's going to, you know, that's going to Jason Peters you and mash you into the dirt. But I think he's very effective at getting positioning, and because of his ability and his athleticism to block out in space, he can hit blocks on the second level. He can hit blocks on screens and whatnot. And you see that from time to time. Like, he doesn't get enough credit for some of those big screens that you've seen the Falcons run over the last couple of years, where the key block has been Jake Mathews nailing a defensive back or nailing a linebacker, you know, 10 yards down the field. And I think people sort of forget those things because all they focus in on is like, oh, that sack or that pressure he gave up in this one game, or that holding call he had in that one particular game 2 years ago or something like that. Yeah, I think, you know, Jake deserves some credit, but we don't have to sit here and act like he's the world's greatest player. Like, it's fine. Like, you don't have to be a superstar. You know, you don't have to be Joe Thomas to be appreciated. You know what I'm saying? I guess, long story short, learn to appreciate, you know, learn to appreciate sevens. That's all I'm saying. You know? And if you think he's not a seven, he's a six. Like, okay, then learn to appreciate sixes. Okay? And if you're like, he's not even a six, he's a five. Well, then learn to appreciate a five. Like, look at me and Muhammad Sanu, my best friend. Like, you know, you just learn to appreciate, you know, these solid, excellent superstar players that aren't superstars. Okay. I'm dead, guys. All right, I'm just rambling out at the end of the show.
You guys know what to do. If you want to hit me up, I'm on Twitter at FalcFans. If it's podcast related, just let me know in the tweet. If it's podcast related, just go ahead and send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. If you prefer Facebook, we're Locked On Falcons there. Give us a like while you're there. If you prefer the emails, then send us an email at LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. As well as you can leave a comment at LockedOnFalcons.com or FalcFans.com where the show is posted daily. All right, guys. Appreciate it. We'll be back with more Falcons content later this week, and we'll see what else comes up. I do want to say that I would like to do a Q&A later this week. Probably Friday if everything goes according to schedule, but potentially Thursday as well, depending on if we have to move things around. So send in those questions that you want answered on the show at the aforementioned addresses and social media accounts, and that's the best way of getting those in. And we'll take care of that at the end of the week. Whatever you have questions for, you know, camp stuff. But again, I just want to remind you that I am not physically at camp, so I can't necessarily say. Don't ask me questions like, "What did you see? What are you seeing with this?" Like, I don't know. Don't ask me that question. But if you have other sort of topics and questions that don't require direct observation of players during practices, please ask me that. All right, guys. Until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.